Private Plan Change 51. So those who weren't here yesterday morning, briefly just introductions. My name's David Mead and I'm an independent hearing commissioner that's been appointed by the council to chair this session. And obviously I've got with me Andrew Henderson here, also an independent commissioner, and councillor Mel Gazzard. So we're from the appointed by the council to hear this and make a recommendation on the plan change. I'm from out of town, I'm down from Auckland, but I know a bit about the local area. I've done a bit of work down here, and Andrew's a former resident too. So yesterday we started out, had a short sort of site visit yesterday morning just to sort of get our heads around what's proposed in terms of the layout, and then had a session yesterday with the applicant when they presented their evidence, and had quite a bit of discussion about various matters. It was a good session. So this morning we had another site visit, so we went out there again and had a more of a look around now that we understood what the plans were. And again, we were assisted by, I think it was Colin, was it, I think, from Patterson Pitts, the surveyors, got that right, hopefully? So he was helpful. He pointed out all where the lots were, the boundaries were, where the vegetation were. You've been out to site, you would have seen some of the poles in terms of the height and those sort of things. So that was a helpful exercise. We drove around the area a bit to get a bit of a sense of what the views might be from the residential area. We went up to the, I'm not quite sure what the name of the road was, but there's a, near the Sticky Forest, where there's a sort of open reserve area which is now invested in council. And there's a couple of walking tracks, and you can stand up there and you can sort of look back down towards the application area. Found that quite an interesting sort of viewpoint too from there. We've been handed a copy of the decision, previous decision. This was, Variation 25, I think. No, it's called Plan Change 15, which is a little bit confusing, I think, but it's finally worked that one out. So this is Variation 25, which was what set the zoning in place that we're looking at today, that copy of the Commissioner's decision out of that one. So that's we've been handed that in terms of material we're looking at. The only other thing that came out of yesterday and just this morning's tour around, what we thought would be helpful for us was if the... the request that we had this table yesterday from, I think it was Dr. Brantley, wasn't it, about the areas of revegetation. It was possible to get it broken down by what would be in private lots versus what would be in the open space area. That would be quite helpful because there is a bit of a mix there around some of those lots. I think lot 20 and 21, I can't remember the numbers, but there's somewhere it's a bit of a mix. And I think, again, it would just be helpful to have that broken down by that public versus private part of it, which hopefully is not a big exercise in terms of, you know...
No, no, it should be quite straightforward. We can even look at the plans if you need to, you know, see it as well, presentation as well.
Sure, okay. Yeah. That would be really helpful, thank you. So I think that's where we're at. So this afternoon's really the chance to submit us. So Mr. Hamilton, I think, is the person on the list. So welcome to come forward.
Afternoon, thank you for that recap on
yes.
What you've been doing.
You're welcome to have a seat or stand or...
I've got a stand, thank you.
...by the mat, wherever you want to be. That's yep. Right, wherever you want to be.
Good, thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to start out saying that I do oppose this plan change in its entirety.
Yes.
The first thing I'd like to for everybody to note is there's a bit of a problem with the geography or the names of the area.
Yeah.
In every report that I've written, read,
yes.
This is referred to the Sticky Forest.
Yeah.
It is not the Sticky Forest.
Right, okay.
This is the plantation.
Plantation, okay.
The Sticky Forest is further to the south, and it is next to the Coromeco block.
Right.
So I'd like to have that noted that
it's
the plantation, it's always been the plantation.
Right.
Okay. I'll just give us a little bit of background about myself. I've been living here for about 28 years. I've been mountain biking in the area for 27 years. I am the original president and one of the founders of Lake Wanaka Cycling, which now is Lake Wanaka, which Mr. Greenway is current president of. And before Lake Wanaka Cycling, there was a steering committee that worked with council and DOC and landowners basically doing exactly the same things the Charles Trust does now. So I've had 20 plus years in helping shape the recreation of this particular area. I'd like to refer to Paul Croft's submission. Now, in his submission, he had some photographs of this area along here, which is open space, and I believe with that report that you just showed us before, that is designated as a no-build zone, and mostly sloping ground, not particularly usable for anybody. So I don't actually feel like that's we're not really talking about things that people can use there. It's just the grass hillside. I don't actually consider that to be any kind of trade-off or removing that. Okay. He also noted in his submission that no one is using this land as far as he was concerned. He'd been there not sure how many times, not sure what day of the week it was, not time of the year, what time of the day, or how many times it was, but he thought that no one's going there, no one's using it, so what use is it to the public? But that's it's rather misleading really, isn't it? Because just because when he's there and there's no one else there, it doesn't mean that other people aren't using it. There are trails through it. There's evidence, I've just been up there myself, there's evidence of people being on that land probably yesterday on their bikes riding through the trails that are there. So it does actually get used quite a bit. Right. And I've ridden in there, I don't know, hundreds of times over the 28 years that I've been living here. So I think those kind of comments, unless he does proper research or has a proper research done on how many times people are there, track counters, all those kind of things, his opinion doesn't really hold any water, I feel. When I was, I'm sorry, another point, the future needs of not just the people that are living here, but of Wanaka people in general, as far as recreation, are getting bigger and bigger all the time. So removing more recreational land from the cachet that we have seems like a counterproductive thing to me. And I think to a lot of people, pretty much everybody I spoke to about this matter is why? Why do you want to do that? Why do you have to remove more recreational land and places where people can wander around without looking at buildings, without looking at subdivisions, and having an unobstructed view behind them? Why do you have to change that? Is it just for money? Is that what the motivation is? And I don't think that is a very good cause, really. If it's someone's profit line, it's not a great cause to get rid of beautiful open spaces. And we're right here on the border of the outstanding natural landscape. It's not a great place to be pushing houses right up to, is it, really? Also, there's quite an erosion issue along here, as you would have noticed, hopefully, when you're walking around, particularly in this little drainage.
Yes, we went to the viewpoint there, I think, the top of the escarpment.
Yeah. So over a period of the time that I've been here, that's eroded quite a lot. And that will keep eroding as well, which will mean that this section here will get smaller and smaller and smaller. And we don't know how long that will take. It might take 50 years, it might take 10 years, depends what the storms are like and all that kind of thing. Because this is when the prevailing wind comes down the lake here, so it gets a lot of action on that little face. If you go up there on a windy day, it's a very, very windy spot. So there's a lot of erosion there. When I was president of Lake Wanaka Cycling, I spent quite a lot of time with Bob Robinson before this plan change was put into action. He wanted to get cyclists on side so he could do his development. And so I spent quite a lot of my own time walking around through here, marking out a trail. Bob came along and checked it all out. And then we had a guy called Anton Wopres, who was an employee of Patterson Pitts, come through and he GPSed the whole thing. So it's all on file somewhere.
Right.
It was a trail from came through from here, used part of the Thread the Needle trail that's been there for 27 years, and came through here and right across this area and went down into Penrith.
Oh.
So it was a nice through trail that anybody could use. Never got built.
Nothing got built.
Who knows where the documentation went? Who knows where all the GPS stuff just disappeared?
Right.
Okay. Never actioned. So it's kind of why do we bother? Why do we bother saying we're going to do this, that and the other thing when nothing ever happens? My feeling is that it doesn't matter how you put it, that anything that goes on here is never ever going to be minor. When you start cutting there with bulldozers and cutting down native vegetation, it's always going to be major. Okay, it's nothing minor about it. And I think the people that say that it's minor, they're just trying to brush it over. It's not on really to say things like that. The other thing that is very, very important for people like myself and everybody else who's a recreationalist in this area, cyclists, walkers, runners, that the plantation. This is our sanctuary up here. Okay, it doesn't belong to us.
No.
We have been using it for a long time. Mm. We've built trails in there, we've maintained trails in there, we've maintained the forest. And the good grace of the people that have let us do that, we're very thankful for that. And now it's passed on to some other hands. I have heard that there are moves for that to be developed. And I feel that, and I'm sure pretty much everybody else who's opposed to this feels that if this was to happen,
right,
then it's going to set a very, very dangerous precedent for that to be asked to be developed. And the town is growing flat out, as you can see.
Yeah.
We have at least 7 retail stores who service the mountain biking community alone. I don't know how many people ride bikes in this town, but it's thousands, and it's growing all the time. So we can't afford to lose more land for development. It's just not a question that should be even entered into.
Yes.
I implore you with all my heart to say no, this is not the right thing for this piece of land, because we need more recreational space. The town is growing. We don't need more expensive real estate. And also, what is best for the future of recreation and the people in Wanaka? We need to think about not just now or 2 years down the track, or 5 years down the track. We need to think about 20, 30, 40 years. That strip of land here is going to become extremely valuable for recreation. When this is all filled in and everybody's got their kids and families and grandparents and whatever, they want somewhere to go, and there isn't really anywhere else to go, is there, right now? This is a great spot, and it's undeveloped, and they can just wander around it there. It's really, really nice, especially in the summertime when the grass is growing up. It's a beautiful spot to go. But if it's got houses on it, and this is all turned into nice green grass, it's not going to be the same, really, is it? So that's another thing I implore you to think about is 30 years down the track, what's that going to be worth? What's that open space going to be worth to us as a community?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
yes.
To say.
No, that's helpful. That's very good.
Thanks.
That's very clear. No, stay there. We've probably got some questions for you.
Yep.
The thread, I think it's called the thread the needle track, which is a sort of the current track through that area.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what's been put in front of us is saying, oh, well, none of the development's going to affect the thread the needle track. It's not going to get that far towards the, you know, the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the track that you were talking about, that you talked about with Bob Robertson and things like that,
yes,
was that a different one, was it?
That's, yes, it is.
Yeah, and that was sort of closer.
Continued all the way across, thread the needle. You can see it here in the photograph. Comes through here, and then it drops down to above that escarpment, and then carries along underneath.
Oh, okay.
We were looking at a trail that went all the way across through here.
Right.
I can't remember exactly where it was in this particular area.
Yeah.
But it definitely connected all the way across.
Right. I don't want to sort of smother your information on the spot, but we got given this plan, which I think they said they've got the trails off the, might be the Bike Wanaka map. You might want to have a quick look at that. These are existing trails.
The blue ones.
Yeah, the blue ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's great. The other ones that are being used at the moment.
Yes.
But
there goes a copy there if you want to hang on to that one.
Yeah.
I guess it's if the flip side was
not to develop it,
yes,
and to have it as more of a public recreation area. Why can't we have more trails there?
Yeah, that's right, even more. Yeah,
because that's, you know, that's what public recreation is about, isn't, yes, it? Getting people out there and getting them using it.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is, you know, we shouldn't stop at that.
Yeah. This
one thing from Sam, that was really helpful. This Stiffen Forest and the plantation.
Yes.
It's been a number of years since I lived here. There's obviously a difference in ownership.
Yes.
Both privately owned.
The plantation, where all these, you know, this very dense part of forest is,
yeah,
directly above the Mitchell Bay subdivision, was held with the Office of Treaty Settlements.
Right, so it's
and it has apparently now, I think Jamie might know where it's gone, yeah, but it has actually been passed on to someone.
Okay.
The Stiffen Forest, there's a fence line basically where Rata Street used to end.
Yeah.
There's a fence line that goes straight up the hill, and there's a demarcation line, and the trees are quite different to the south. To the north have been much more managed, taller, much more managed trees. The Stiffen Forest, I believe the bulk of it is in private ownership, belongs to a guy who's in the States, to the best of my knowledge. But because that's in the no-build zone, you can't do anything with it.
Yeah.
And there's a trail along through the bottom of it, and I'm pretty sure that council requisitioned a chunk of it to put the big water tank on the backside,
right,
which is above where
it's right.
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what the ownership is, the current ownership is.
So when we were on site this morning, looking, standing on the site, looking up towards the plantation.
Yep.
At the very end, you can see a public seat.
Yes.
A bench seat.
Yep.
So is that something you put in as part of the cycle trails, or is that something?
I'm not exactly sure who put that in, to be honest. It wasn't me, and I don't know if it was part of Bike Wanaka did that. It has been there for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a great place to sit and look out at the lake. Yes, I don't know.
No, that's fine.
I can't answer that question.
Thanks very much.
The trails on the to the east on the open space zone, below the forest, making a lot of use, I noticed, in the south.
It's a wide, gravel
path.
Is for mountain biking, for example, it's not a particularly attractive thing to ride on. I'd say maybe people going for a walk, pushing the pram or the buggy, and might be used by them. Can't say I've ever seen anybody on it. There is a car park over here that in terms of did provide for the mountain bikers to access into the forest, and there's a trail that goes out of there and up into the trees. You see lots and lots of cyclists on that, but heading this direction, I don't know who uses it or how much use it has. But it is, you know, this is all fairly steep ground. It does flatten out here, but from there back, it's all just a solid hill.
So you have a little bit of a conflict that we have over the hill, where we have one seat on the biking community who wants to track as rough and steep as possible, and the other lot wants it. So they can push the child, push the chair.
Well, yeah, down on here is great, perfect place for it.
Yeah.
But there's other parts which, you know, apart from the little trail that's winding through, it's completely untouched.
Well, we had a look at some of the food and
yeah, yeah. And originally it was a sheep track, because
yeah,
the whole thing was farmed by the
people.
So they've just been slowly widened as they've been used. And I'm sure there's a lot of people go through on foot as well, not just mountain biking.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, no, thanks for that. No, that's what I think from your submission too is, I mean, there's the biking aspect to it, isn't it? There's more than that. It's the walkers and the open space and the green space.
It's not
space
just
and
about the mountain bikers.
Yeah,
it's about anybody who wants to go there and use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Excellent. Now, we've got Jamie Greenway and Bike Monica. So again, you're welcome to sit, stand.
Oh, just
for the heat stand.
Good afternoon, commissioners. How are we?
Good, thank you.
Yes, I'm here to speak to support Bike Wanaka's submission. We oppose the Climate Change 51 in its entirety. I'd like to thank Mr. Hamilton, former president of Lake Wanaka Cycling, giving you a little bit of the history and how the club originally discussed proposals with Mr. Robertson and the Infinity Group in the original process for this subdivision. And we'd like to see those agreements fulfilled now, which obviously this plan change doesn't. There seems to be a lot of concentration on the fact that we seem upset that the houses are going to come near a track, or that the track is going to be changed in some way. I'd like to challenge that and say that thread the needle, as Doug said, I mean, it was a sheep track 20 odd years ago. I've been riding bikes here for about 14 years, living here for 10. I've ridden 20, and in that time I know that there's never been any maintenance done by the bike club, or it was never a formal track that's built. And to be honest, it's a beautiful part of the country, but where the track's location is here nor there. The fact that it's within an open space is the critical point. Also that in the proposed district plan, the majority of Plan Change 51 zone is within an outstanding natural landscape that the QLDC have formalised. The bench that, Mr. Henderson, he came up with, I sat there many times. I don't know who put that in, that was there when I came here. But I do know that when I first started sitting there and I looked west, I didn't see anything except mountains and lakes and trees. Now I can definitely see the northern end of the Peninsula Bay subdivision. And if this plan change were to go ahead, then I'd see a lot more of that subdivision as well. It certainly is a beautiful part of the world, and it's a great place to stop and take in that view. Mr. Hamilton probably took most of my good material. just reiterating everything that he said, to think that this plan change is going to benefit the community, the wider community somehow, is to me beyond belief, really. It's certainly not going to help with the current housing crisis. I doubt they're going to be affordable. As far as in a few of the evidence that was put in this week by the submitters, Mr. Bolin, who thoroughly took to thread the needle track and the state of it, etc. As I said before, it seems a bit of a waste of time, and that's not really our priority.
Yes.
The track could be anywhere.
Right.
The other fact is that the amount of revenue that they seem to think the council are going to make from this stuff, from this going ahead, and also the savings from the maintenance of that open space, I find those fairly fanciful figures as well. I'm not sure of the open space already vested through sections 1 to 5, this open space up here.
Yes.
I'm not sure how many times that's been mowed or had wilding trees taken out of it or had much rabbit control, but I doubt it's $7,500 worth, as quoted in Mr. Bonney's evidence. We'd just like to see that area kept as an open space zone and an outstanding natural landscape as the council has already deemed fit. And we will, as we say, oppose in its entirety Plan Change 51. Bike Wanaka Incorporated sit on the Aspiring Tracks Network, which I do believe we're going to speak quite soon this afternoon. And although we are part of that very important group, we don't agree with their, if you like, bending to the developers' whims. We're not interested in any trade-offs or any sort of movement at all of anything, and we're 100% against the plan change.
Right.
I think that pretty much sums it up, so I won't keep you any longer.
No, that's great, that's very clear. This is sort of a bit more of a matter of, I don't know, detail a lot, but and the sort of sharing of tracks between walkers and cyclists, there's sort of a proposal here you could have a separate walking track would come through from the cycle track, and that would be a benefit for both.
Oh, it'd be fantastic. I mean, anyone that lives here now or is around this area or probably all over the country has seen the same thing, where
recreational use is increasing, the conflict of trails, we see a lot of that on the outlet trail around around the lakefront, between cyclists and walkers. And therefore, if this was to remain in an open space, was actually officially handed over to the council, then it would be great to see a development plan put in place whereby the track, the Skerr Heights track, which comes through the old Sticky Forest, and is the wide gravel path that continues around here, it would be great to see that continue all the way around for people that don't want steep or difficult tracks, that want wide, easy, flat trails that they can walk, cycle, push the pushchair. It would be great to see that developed, as well as more mountain bike tracks for the likes of myself and Mr. Hamilton. We certainly don't want to keep it for ourselves, we want it to be there for everyone. That's the whole point, I believe, of this hearing.
Yes, that's right. So, that's right, and if it's maintained as open space, there's still that option to do that, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, up till now it's quite informal.
Yes.
And would know very similar to the plantation, sticking with the ownership being dubious, or not knowing, no particular formal agreement between users and owners. Whereby if it was vested into open space and would be between potentially the aspiring tracks network, work with council and the develop that area into more user-friendly tracks.
Yeah, that was the other question I had for you, and I guess it's just drawing on your sort of general experience. I mean, again, what's been proposed is sort of saying, well, okay, part of it will become private, but the public part, there's a sort of commitment to do some works on it, so at least that there's a commitment there to do it. If it just stays public land, then where this might sit within the priorities of all the other works and tracks and trails and things that could go on with open space areas, but open-ended. So I guess the question, sorry, long question, but it's just your experience where you say, look, it'd be great to upgrade this track and this through this open space or reserve area because it'd be really, you know, good for our members. I mean, how does that work with the council? I mean, what do you...
I'm not sure what the original agreement was. Through plan stages 1 to 4, but I believe that part of the agreement was that Infinity were to build the track, this gravel track through.
Yeah, that's right.
And so whether there was any sort of formal agreement with the original plan that track would be continued around, I'm unsure.
No, I guess it's been what your experience may be like, or just, you know, hypothetically, the Thread the Needle track, and say, well, that'd be great if it was upgraded, still within council land. I mean, do you go to the council local board or something do and say it would be great if we could find some money to upgrade this, or is that something your members do? Or
No, that's something we do as a committee.
And
there is a lot of funds out there available through trusts and various things that volunteer-led organisations like Bike Wanaka can tap into.
Yeah,
and obviously, as I say, you know, we are a volunteer organisation, so expanding the time to look into a track project like that.
But given
the opportunity, we'd jump at the chance.
Yeah, but you can point to examples where you've been through that process.
We mostly with the Department of Conservation and the council.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Relationship with ATN.
Okay, so we can cover that one. Yes.
That is overall good, you would say?
Yes, I believe so. The five groups are key stakeholders in the tracks of this area, and the bike club by default is an important voice there. The fact that potentially that group would, I don't know how you'd say, bend to the will of this plan change and potentially compromise our organisation, just when it comes to this sort of thing, we're not willing to compromise. Once it's gone forever. And the landscape will be irreversibly changed. There's no two ways about it.
Thank you.
I think your submission was very helpful.
Final question. Bike Wanaka, is it fair to say that you're more the sort of mountain biking end of the spectrum, eh? The sort of keen outdoorsy sort of difficult terrain and,
We represent all off-road cyclists. We develop trails from runner bike, the little balance bikes.
Yeah.
The little tiny kids.
Yes.
We've developed tracks in Albert Town and Wanaka.
Yeah.
For those guys, and we go from those guys right through to the pro elite level, of riders racing everything in between. We allocate tracks and coaching, land use.
My impression, isn't it? It seems to be sort of quite a growth in that sort of more the, what would be the recreational cycling, but the sort of general sort of cycling out for a bit of fresh air or, rather than the sort of the hardcore mountain biking.
Yeah.
Is that?
Well, we have, there's a trail on the northern side of the river, Dean's Bank. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. Serviced by the 12-kilometre loop. It's a blue intermediate trail, but it's
that's
a
step
up from the riverside track, but that's very much like that.
The grade 1 or 2 type. Is it grade 1 or 2 type tracks? Because there's...
Yeah, 2 to 3.
2 to 3, right.
We've actually recently removed the track counter, but we were averaging sort of 50,000 plus hits per annum on that trail, and very popular too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's definitely the middle ground trail is, the most popular.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, everyone has to start somewhere, but as soon as they can ride the river track, they want to progress and get to something else.
Yeah.
Obviously, from there on, it's not always the case.
Yes. Right. No, okay, that's great. Thank you. Thank you. It's just
Mr. Greenway.
Now, Upper Tootha Environmental Society. So, Mr. Harwood, is it?
Howard.
Yes. Yeah, please come forward again. Welcome, sit, stand. We've got some. Great.
I'm going to rearrange this slightly, sir.
No, I just
don't like sitting with my back to the...
No, that's fine.
Whenever you're ready. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Julian Howarth. I've been on the committee of the Environmental Society since its inception, which was 21 years ago. And at the moment, I'm the secretary and the treasurer. The summary of that position. The Society opposes the plan change in its entirety. Society supports the conclusions reached by the Section 42A report and adopts this report. The Society believes that the landowner is showing bad faith towards the community by proposing the plan change. Approval of the plan change threatens the integrity of the decision-making process and will cause the community to lose faith in this process. Section 42A report. It would be a complete waste of time to rehash in detail issues discussed so thoroughly in the Section 42A report. I will, however, highlight a few issues the Society sees as critical. The key reasons given for rejecting the plan change are adverse effects on landscape and visual amenity values will be significant and cannot be sufficiently mitigated. There will be ecological losses rather than ecological gains, as claimed. Recreational amenity will be irreversibly compromised, and these effects are not mitigated. And I have to say, I was very impressed with the submissions of the bike. It's an excellent submission. The intergenerational and irreversible effects of developing the subject site on landscape and amenity values, ecological values, and the quality of the environment are considered to outweigh the short-term and minor benefits relating to efficient land use, economic benefits, and employment. Addressing each of these points in turn, point one is addressed by reference to the evidence of Ms. Diane Lucas below. The Society also relies on Dr. Reed's landscape evidence, as quoted in the Section 42A report. Point two is addressed and supported by Ms. Palmer's evidence. Society adopts this. In relation to point three, various members of the Society's committee are keen walkers and bikers. The entire committee is familiar with the subject site and is aware of its value as a recreation area that is handy to town. Ms. Galavas's recreational evidence is adopted by the Society. The Society believes that the applicant's offer to improve existing tracks is a fig leaf to cover the obvious adverse effects of the proposal. The local Upper Clutha Tracks Trust, and this is important because the committee has raised this issue just a few minutes ago. Yeah. The local Upper Clutha Tracks Trust has been able to access funding to develop an extensive track network in the Upper Clutha vicinity. I'm surprised they're not submitters here today, actually. So there's no reason to believe it could not raise funds to improve the tracks on the subject site should this be needed, which it does not appear to be the case in the evidence. Though I do see this point that separating the walkers from the bikers is certainly, we're moving in that direction. But in my opinion, that would be another reason to retain more open space, obviously, rather than lose open space. Point four simply does not stand up to scrutiny. The Queenstown Lakes District already has sufficient land zoned for an additional 50 to 55,000 people, according to district plan evidence from Council Planner Matthew Pates. And that's evidence that I've referenced it there briefly. If, say, 80 people live in the 26 houses proposed, this represents about 0.16% of this number. It follows that the effect on housing availability, the economy and employment is de minimis in this context. Of particular importance is the irreversible nature of the adverse effects the plan change promotes. At the end of this chap's submission here, sorry, I've got your name, he said, once we've lost it, we've lost it. Yeah. So the irreversible nature of the adverse effects the plan change promotes. Recent district plan evidence for the council, commissioned by the council, from Philip Osborne, stated, and I won't read all that, so I'll leave you to read it, but you can see that he talks about how difficult it is to retroactively repair damage if it does occur, and that it talks about the threats to the 2 billion per annum it generates in tourism spend and so on. But the main point there is that once it's gone, it's gone. And it's so important to the town, to the local district. This should be seen in the context where Dr. Reed categorises today's entire subject site as outstanding natural landscape. Now, you have to be careful not to get too hung up about the landscape lines. If houses are built just outside the outstanding natural landscape line, those houses will still have effects on the outstanding natural landscape, but visually, because they're right beside it or right in front of it. And when you're in the outstanding natural landscape and looking out, you've got the houses right in front of you. So, yeah, whether some of the houses are in or out or right on the boundary, the effects are still there. You can't get too hung up on these lines. Yeah. They're not lines on the ground. They're not drawn on the ground. Landscape evidence. I have cut and pasted a few paragraphs of Mr. Di Lucas's expert landscape evidence to variation 15. Now, this is the variation that's before the decision that you have there, variation 25. Yeah, I'm sure you're aware of that. Peninsula Bay Special Zone in December 2003 to show the landscape importance of the Lakeside Ridge. Today's subject site. This evidence was part of the evidence that caused the Environment Court to decline Variation 15. Ms. Lucas says, and I'll only read a couple of bits of this, but I'm sure the commissioners will scan through it quickly. So I'm just picking out some highlights from what I've put there, but it's all important, those quotes. The Kanuka shrubland is a distinctive natural feature of the site, generically and cumulatively contributing much to the character of Wanaka and to the outstanding natural qualities of Lake Wanaka. The parkland effect on the site is of high aesthetic value. The Lakeside Ridge forms a strong intermediate natural ridgeline dominated by native vegetation. Kanuku shrubland stretches continuously from Beacon Point down to Clutha. In amongst the Kanuku shrubland, it provides a very natural experience. The Kanuku is significant, a major natural element providing a strong visual association with the lake. Considerable loss of naturalness and remote quality will result from the visibility of built forms over the lakeside ridge amongst the Kanuka. There would be less Kanuka, perhaps 20 residences over the lakeside ridge. These would necessitate removal of a substantial amount of existing mature Kanuka. And I would point out here that since that evidence was written, that was 13 years ago, the native vegetation on this lakeside ridge has improved and just got better, got bigger and more extensive. It spreads over that time. And this has been experienced in other areas in the Upper Clutha, for instance, on Mount Iron, over that kind of period, perhaps a little bit longer, where the Kanuka has spread and continues to spread to cover all of the areas. So it's just getting more impressive all the time. It can only add to Miss Lucas's evidence the importance that she attaches to that native vegetation. It can be seen from these extracts that Miss Lucas, a well-respected and experienced landscape architect, sees the lakeside ridge and the Kanuka covering it a very high landscape value. Now, the decision-making process. While the planner, I believe, correctly states that this is a de novo hearing and that there's no legal impediment to the plan change being approved, there is an issue concerning the Society's past involvement and the integrity of the whole decision-making process. And just as an aside here, I took 5 minutes legal advice on this morning. I was chatting to a lawyer. And he said to me, well, actually, there may be a legal principle here. He called it equitable legal obligation. Now, whether that is a sound legal principle or not, this is the advice I was given. So there is some obligation for these applicants to give this land. They offered it as public open space. They offered it as a reserve. And there is this equitable legal obligation at this point in time. The Society was party to the process in, apart from variation 15, variation 25, and was supportive of the deal between the applicant and council, whereby today's subject site would be retained as open space zone, though the Society much preferred reserve status, and where the vast majority of the variation 25 subject site was zoned for urban subdivision and development. The reasons for taking this position can best be explained by reference to submissions made by the Society to variation 25 in 2006. In general, the Society does not object to the proposed rezoning of the Peninsula Bay site as proposed in the variation. The Society sees the proposal as an inevitable and logical extension to urban Wanaka in the future. So the Society took a very pragmatic point of view there. Dennis Thorne appealed the whole lot, and we quite upset Dennis Thorne. He was spending a lot of money. He was just a local guy with a lot of money who didn't want to see that area developed. And we said, well, sorry, we think it's going to go anyway, Dennis. But we were very, very keen to protect the end part, which has a considerable landscape value. So we took a very, very pragmatic approach. And in their further submission to variation 25, the Society disagrees with the following statements made by Infinity Investments, who are the Plan Change 51, Plan Change 25 landowner. Sorry, I should read. In their submission, the variation is consistent with the existing, this is what Infinity said, the variation is consistent with the existing policies and objectives in the partly operative district plan. Those areas of sensitivity will be protected through open space zoning. The objectives of the open space zone are effective in terms of achieving preservation of open space and landscape values. So this is what the landowner is saying here. Yeah. The Society does not agree that by creating the open space zone, landscape values will be preserved or protected. Society seeks that the areas marked as open space zone instead become council or dock reserves while retaining the current underlying rural general zoning, and that change has been made to the boundaries of these reserve areas as detailed in our submission. The Society does not believe that the new open space zoning will give adequate protection to these areas. There's no justification for the introduction of a new zoning, further unnecessarily complicating the partly operative district plan. Council will have better and more effective control of these areas if they become reserves under the Reserves Act. It can be seen that the Society pragmatically supported Variation 25, where it resulted in the rezoning of most of the subject site to create a new, extensive, largely urban zone that sought the protection of today's subject site through reserve status. As the Section 42A report explains, the applicant subsequently agreed to reserve status for this area. Variation 25 resulted in a compromise supported by council, the society, and the developer, the landowner, where the Peninsula Bay subject site was able to be developed as an urban zone worth tens of millions of dollars, while a minor concession was made where a small part of the site, the Lakeside Ridge area, was zoned open space. The landowner recognised the importance of the open space zoning at that time. It can be seen from the quotes that the society never trusted the applicant's own assurance that by creating an open space zone, landscape values would be protected. It preferred the area to be vested in council as reserves. Today's cynical application shows that the society was correct to be cynical at that time. This becomes even more apparent given the landowner's subsequent offer to grant reserve status to the subject site, which it has now also decided to renege on. In very grudgingly accepting the open space zoning in Variation 25, the society relied on council to administer the district plan in a way that the open space zone would remain protected from residential development. Which brings us to today's hearing. Here you are administering the district plan. If this plan change is approved, developers will be encouraged to offer deals that, on the face of it, offer value to the community, with the full knowledge that council will support them in reneging on the deal later. Whether this is legal or not is not the issue. The issue is the integrity of the decision-making process and the way a territorial authority administers its district plan. As the Section 42A report says, approving the plan change would set a concerning precedent for vesting of reserve land for future staged subdivisions with open space zones. And I consider that the process has occurred whereby the developer has been allowed to defer the vesting of this part of the open space zone until the final subdivision stage, stage 6C, and has then applied for a plan change, which will require significant changes to those commitments, is undesirable and sets a precedent for the future. Conclusion: the Society believes the plan change will not achieve the purposes of the Resource Management Act. Plan change 51 threatens the integrity of the open space zone. If this plan change is approved, this will send a clear message that open space zones can be overturned willy-nilly and that valid resource management arguments are not needed to delete open space zones. The Society calls for the landowner to abandon this plan change and stick by its own statement in 2006. Those areas of sensitivity will be protected through open space zoning. The objectives of the open space zone are effective in terms of achieving preservation of open space and landscape values. Thank you, sir.
Right. Yes, thanks for the written submission there. That's helpful to get that down on paper for us. I guess stepping back from the issues that are with precedent and those sort of things, yesterday, quite a lot of discussion on this land and it's sort of, the values of the land towards the lake, I guess sort of towards the north, compared to the values of the land which sort of fall more towards the south and sort of overlap, more relating to Peninsula Bay and the urban development. And the open space zone sort of covers both those sort of areas. But it was put in front of us is the valleys to the south, especially on the sort of lower slopes.
You mean looking from the south to the south?
What do you call to the south? Along near Affinity Drive.
Towards the forest.
Yeah, that'll be right. Yeah. It's sort of got less of a landscape value, I guess.
Right. Well, I mean, I would just stand by two sorts of two blocks of landscape evidence you have in front of you that seem to give it quite a lot of value.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only taken extracts of this literature, but I think Dr. Reed seems to give it quite a high value in its own right as well, even when viewed from the south or southwest.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think I can add to that because that's expert landscape evidence, you know. I mean, it would certainly be my view, but I'm not here to give evidence, but that would have, it has value from that direction.
Yes, yeah.
The open space as well, it's not just that it's, as I say, how's it going to look in 25 years' time when it can be spread across?
Yeah. Right. And again, there's an open space, which is more, I think it's partly landscape. Open space is also just about breathing space and amenity and all those sort of things.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Just in your views, since in the last 10 or 15 years, that the Karuka vegetation is sort of it's expanded, and I guess, and grown in the sense that there's more now than there was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's come about in the absence of any form of management.
Yes, that's right.
So one of the arguments that we have is that in order for that vegetation to succeed and survive and to be renewed, is that it needs to be managed, which is part of the offer that the questioner has put up.
No, that's rubbish. Yeah. I mean, that's from having heard lots of landscape evidence over the years, but also my own practical experience at Mount Eye. And there are a number of reserves, other reserves in this area where the Karuka is spreading. You know, I can point to areas in Albert Town reserves that it's rubbish.
Yeah, so where I was going is your observation is that if it's left alone or if it's not actively managed, it can still...
It will.
It will.
That's experience, clear experience.
I mean, just to push this along a little bit, you're aware there's been a few changes since what was notified in terms of the lots. There's a couple of lots that have been dropped out. I think the ones that are most sort of in the ONL, five and six, I think.
It makes no difference to us.
Right.
No. This is really, you may not be giving this weight that I think it should be, but it's a matter of principle and integrity for us.
Yeah, okay.
And I realise the legal position may be different to that, but community will thank you for approving this.
Right.
I mean, I'm not missing my words here.
Thankfully, I don't live in town. So, but no, I take the point, okay, that's the president, which is a critical view. Maybe it's something I might pick up in the next submitter, the forestry bird, but. The northern portion of the site, I think it's northern, down towards Bill Ring. Bill Ring, isn't it? If you turn to the map.
Where is it?
Bull Ring is the name of the road, the little... Bull Ridge, sorry.
Where
is it? There's the cul-de-sac at the bottom of the van
orange,
there.
The orange one at the bottom.
Yeah, the orange one at the bottom there. The next van
up. Come up.
That sort of area in there, compared to if you go to the blue lots to the north, where there's sort of more Karnuka and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of getting quite fine grained, and I, you know, you probably haven't looked at, you know.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you're kind of drawing back from that detail to a certain extent, aren't you, and just saying, well, look, there's open space.
Well, I can't see why the connector wouldn't spread across there. I
was pretty close to you anyway, yeah.
If it was left as it is, yeah.
Yeah.
It might take 50 years, but we're looking at generations here. We're talking, that's what the Act says in terms of Estonian natural landscape for future generations.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Okay, thank you for that. That's very clear.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. you're right, you need to find something, or you're okay?
We'll manage.
It's Mr. Paul Jesus. Is it? That's yes. Right, great.
And Stephen.
Stephen, yes.
Yes.
Stephen. Now, we got your evidence, thanks, Stephen. So we had a quick read of that yesterday morning, which was helpful. So thanks for getting in on time. That was useful. But as I said to the other expert witnesses, feel free to take us to the bits of the evidence you think are important for us to look at and review. So it's over to you how you want to deal with that when you get to your evidence. If you want to just give us a submission, summary or take us through it, happy to do that either way. So there's a chance. We got it yesterday, had a chance to go through it pretty quickly, so it might be worth a bit of time. If you want to spend a bit of time taking us through it, that'd be good.
Sure.
Yeah. I think we've got some submissions to these out first.
And as I approach these, seek some guidance from you as to the amount that needs to be read.
Sure.
It's fair to say that the material was prepared before we learned that the changes were made.
Right.
And but we don't resile from anything of those positions. But I have gone through our submission and endeavoured to identify the various parts of it, but that's taken a bit of repetition. So we'll just...
Well, leave it in your hands. I think you're probably a good judge. Yeah. Good judge. What we need to do.
But, however, I'll start with a controversy.
Yes.
Following on from the last submitter, he used the word cynical as a reference to the approach of the what I'm going to call the applicants.
Yeah,
that's right. And this is, I'm going to bring it to your attention because I think it's important. The applicant themselves in their opening submission on page, their clause 22, actually says it's useful but not determinative to understand the history of the plan change.
Yes.
And of course, the last witness, having been very much involved in it, was able to help you in that regard, and as you indicated, you've got it before you. But this, I'll take you to, again, of the opening submissions of the council, in clause 39. And I'll read, moreover, while plan change itself is currently used for, plan change site itself is currently used for general wandering by walkers, which should not be affected, it is important to note that this current informal use on private land with no right of access at the present time. Now it goes on to a most astounding proposition in my view. It says over the page, as such the existing environment for the purposes of an effects assessment is nearly privately owned open space land that is informally and unlawfully used by walkers from time to time. Now I would be amazed if the witnesses you've heard this afternoon were aware that it's believed by this applicant that their activities, walkers is used here, riders, is unlawfully used this time. And the irony is that no mention is made in here that Infinity actually own the land, but I understand that is the position. And so I just want to reinforce what Mr. Harworth said. I have a press release here that was issued by the council on 14th of August 2006, and accredited Ms. Schusler. The rezoning adopted by the revised variation protects over 30% of the site as open space, ensuring public access and land protection into the future. This was a major breakthrough in the process. And then I have accessed the various reports, the Section 32 analysis, which concluded on page 74, the imposition of open space zone on the more sensitive lands around Peninsula Bay is an appropriate method. It concludes, it enables these lands to be retained in their existing state without the threat of any development occurring. occurring in the future, without the threat of any development occurring in the future. This is a necessary method due to the landscape ecological values and a lesser extent the recreation attributes. Now, something from Infinity themselves. In the change, 25th of June 2006, it is said, Infinity Investments representatives at the hearing indicated that the company intends to offer all the open zone land to the council as reserve. Now, the net result is, I don't know the detail of this, but I understand that over time, and I refer to this in my submission, for a variety of very good reasons from their point of view, they've resiled from that position. And they've stood back, and they've been able to persuade the council, it would seem, that they want the land not as a reserve, so they can make this application, and in fact, ultimately go back on the whole understanding that was held by the community when this was the open space zoning arrived on the scene. And that's the cynicism that last witness was referring to. And the record seems very clear that they've got themselves into this position by simply resiling from a decision that was made and the council has gone wrong. Okay, to the text. Now, first three paragraphs set out the position, something of the nature of the forest bird. Many people have seen it a number of times, but there are, in fact, 70,000 members and supporters of a national organisation, and so that is a heck of a lot of people to be behind and backing what is being done today. I'm Ivan Ulke, chairman, and I note that I serve as a senior solicitor with the Department of Conservation for many years, private practice before that, and I appear today as an advocate on behalf of Forest and Bird. Anne Stephen, well, her qualifications are set there. It's a little bit important to note that Anne was involved in the preparation of our initial submission, and so she's constrained to some extent as to what she can do today. What she has personal knowledge of is the establishment of the line of the ONL, and that's a particular thing, and that's what she can do as an expert. But as you'll see, as a local, she's got a very good knowledge of the area, and that we hope to be persuaded. In paragraph 6, we acknowledge the amendments that are made to the proposed scheme plan for plan change 51, which Mr. Espy has helpfully set out in his page 8 of his evidence. The amendments slightly reduce the effect on landscape and open space values, but has negligible effect on mitigating the loss of indigenous biodiversity over the eastern edge of the ridge. Our submission opposing this change and asking for the existing open space to be invested in the council as reserved stands as it was. Reading through the catalogue of submitters in opposition, our branch is one of a large group that feels that the principal issues today have been done and dusted. And I'll go on to really put in another way my view that most people who take an interest in this matter believed it was all over and are surprised with what we're dealing with today. So I'm down to clause 10, and this is our going back to 9, as stated in the, this could be covered, 10, the three particular specific provisions of our plan, the provision of residential development over outstanding natural landscape, ONL and lake margin affecting natural character and openness, is one, the imposition of residential development over land with indigenous vegetation cover resulting in permanent loss of vegetation and further reduction of habitat, locally rare ecosystems and the introduction of new indigenous vegetation that were not completely, that which is not completely appropriate for this site. And thirdly, the reduction of open space due to the extension of private residential development into land currently owned open space. And so there's a summary there of our opposition. These remain in place, and we seek, in the second last sentence, the vesting of the land as a recreation reserve, although we accept that this hearing isn't going to do that. We then, under page 2, under the heading, we submit that identify three fundamental limitations that the proposed plan does not address. These are an important component of the case, and are all supported by Victoria Jones and her section 42A report. Before I return to that, for completeness, the balance of our submissions to divide into five sections, which deal with the following matters, and I list them there. The reference to the initial Environment Court, which decided that this was not a place for any development of the nature that's taking place at the present time. Two of our covenants, which is now redundant. That the proposed development would not protect the lake margin, the outstanding natural landscape, and the indigenous vegetation. So, into these fundamental matters, limitations of the plan change, the proposed change plan does not assist the council in achieving the designated purpose of the district plan to achieve the purposes of the Resource Management Act. And this is where I obviously, you will have guessed this, of course, rely heavily on Victoria Jones and the support that she has behind us. So we reached this conclusion, we examined the proposal against the objectives and policies of the proposed plan, and we also note that in section 42, that's the conclusion reached by Victoria Jones. So what we're comfortable about there, not only do the objects and policies not support the proposal, but the material is behind. The second point, adequately recognise and provide for matters of national importance, section 6, and other matters, section 7. This issue goes to the heart of the society's concerns. As a body that has for its focus the preservation of natural species and their habitat, the loss of that habitat is of concern. The loss of a few hectares of Kānuka and Short Tussock may seem a minor matter. Society believes that such losses will only be halted and reversed when a public at large develop a renewed appreciation of the natural world and its virtues. The present use of the area in question for walking, biking, and general appreciation of its natural attributes is an example of this appreciation. Scimitars, 200 or so from near and far, are endeavouring to mount a very strong argument for our protection of this space. Perpetuity, so whatever its potential may be, it can flourish and be enjoyed. And this is supported by section 42A report, and I've just identified the names and the paragraphs which I read, and I say we strongly support that and the conclusions. And the third point, fundamental, that we make is that this will assist the council to fulfil its functions in accordance with section 31 RMA, but not limited to the integrated management of the effects of the use, development and protection of land and associated resources of the district and the other maintenance of indigenous biodiversity. There might be a little bit of ecological matters. The section 42A report has some strong words to describe the effect that the plan change would have on matters ecological. I identified them there, because the most recent version of the applicant's intentions would see the destruction of much of the existing vegetation within the plan change area, especially the short tussock grasslands, while an attempt is made to replace it with almost different vegetation. The extract from the report is worthy of repeating here, and so I set it out, and this is from Ms. Palmer's evidence. This fact will be probably the less spectacular part of the site is the short tussock grasslands, and Stevens will endeavour to persuade you that they might not look particularly attractive, but they're disappearing fast. They're the first ones to go under the plough, and so that is increasing their importance almost by the day. And I say, still in 20, we're particularly concerned at the loss of short tussock grassland because there was so little left around Wanaka. It's now rare in the wider Wanaka Hawe Basin. What's left is fast is disappearing under agricultural development. To our knowledge, the area on Plan Change 51 site is the only area left of any reasonable quality where one can appreciate how a fescue tussock grassland is like. Through lack of rabbit control, the community on Mount Iron is so severely depleted it appears to have almost disappeared. And the only other area we know of is a tiny area at the north end of Sticky Forest. We know of no examples of recreational fescue tussock grassland in that demonstrate the natural diversity of an existing one, even in its depleted state. And, locals will be aware that a major hearing some months ago of land on the eastern side of the Harvey River, where major herbert irrigators were approved, and the area right next to the Hawe River was lost forever. That's the reality. We also disagree with the applicant's ecologist that the fescue grassland community will disappear. This community has persisted since pre-European times, despite agricultural use and a lack of management for conservation purposes, and it is part of the climax community for this particular area, which is a dynamic mosaic of Kanoka woodland, open areas of grassland and graying shrublands. Now, there's a 21 is a lengthy extract from our submission, and most of that material has been said in one form or other, so I won't believe it. But in respect of that, we noted happily again that the 42 report was very much in support of it, and the particular sections there we have cited. And I go on to say these are strong words indeed from Victoria Jones, a highly regarded and experienced RMA consultant. She finds support in the general submissions, Dr. Reed's evidence, and in her opinion finds support not only in part two of the RMA, but also the district-wide landscape objectives and policies. And so what we've done here is this finding dovetails comfortably with the latter part of our submission, where the proposed plan states, and the goal is our distinctive landscapes are protected from inappropriate development. The submission goes on to list the following seven objectives of the plan that the plan change in our submission fails to meet. With the benefit of locally in the proposed plan of the Wanaka specific objective, which is manage the scale and location of urban growth in the Wanaka urban growth boundary. I was hearing quite properly briefly yesterday morning, I think there was a point that was being made by the applicants of this area is within the Wanaka growth boundary, and therefore it's up for grabs. It certainly is, but only if it passes all the various tests which we're trying to outline before you. So the two policies have, the two policies above have direct relevance to the decision before you and our submission, and are, in strong word, insurmountable barrier to the applicant's ambitions in my submission. First one is 4241, limit of spatial growth of Wanaka, so that one, a distinction between urban and rural areas is maintained to attract the quality and character of the environment and visual amenity. Outstanding natural landscapes and outstanding natural features are protected from the encroachment of urban development. And I'd just like to pause there. Anyone, and I'm sure many people in this room have done this, sat in Infinity Drive in recent times and looked up, and on the eastern side there are the low flats and the peaks showing where the development has been allowed on the eastern side. And then the proposal begins there, and I think lots 6 to 12 still on the relatively flat land, and then that's when the slope of the hill goes up to the ridge, and the balance of the building sites are set out there. But it's a classic example of how, in my view, in the view of the society, the residential development is being jammed up against this ridge line. A ridge line, once again, if you look from Infinity Drive, you've got the ridge line there, and you've got the snow-covered mountains in the background, and right around to mountains above Stevens and stuff. So, I mean, it's classic visual amenity country, as well as all the other things, and it's a classic example of where these particular Wanaka-type objectives and policies are related and not being met in our submission. I think I got to policy 4262, it's intended to ensure that development within the WUGB supports increased density through greenfield development in appropriate locations to avoid sprawling into the surrounding rural areas. This isn't just a rural area, it's sprawling and intruding into the an outstanding natural landscape. And I thought your previous witness made an excellent point that the, and Mr. Espy said this, that the setting aside, the deciding on what an outstanding landscape, it's done on a large, broad brush scale. So the line inevitably is a general impression of where the boundary should be. And when I look at his attempts to push one of the units a few metres to the west in order to ensure the line runs sort of along the front door, it's a classic example of being tinkered with, or the plan being tinkered with to fit something where, in our view, it simply doesn't fit. In paragraph 61 of the section 42 report, it summarises the rationale for the plan change. In subparagraph 1, it is noted Peninsula Bay LDR, the low density residential zone, is almost fully developed. So the applicant is encouraged in point one above to support increased density through green field infill development, to avoid the applicant has chosen to do just the opposite, in my view, as I've tried to explain in a few words.
Yeah.
goal in the staying with the WANACAP specific goals, objectives and policies, goal 322, the strategic and integrated management of urban growth. And this is, we refer to at the bottom to page 2 of our submission, stands out like a beacon in the context of this discussion of the applicant's proposal. Once again, I cannot improve on referring directly to our submission, where the objective is 3-2, it's a minor point, but there's actually a dot between the last two. And the objective is to ensure urban development occurs in a logical manner, to provide a compact, well-designed and integrated urban form, to protect the district's rural landscapes from sporadic and sprawling development. Now, I think this part here should not be in italics. We submit that the proposed development will breach the strong... it's from straight out of our submission.
Okay.
We submit that the proposed development will breach the strong contained by natural landscape of the residential built-up area that currently exists and was a result of sprawl of the ridge towards the lake. This does not support compact urban form and does not protect rural landscape. The landscape in this case being especially important and sensitive to change because it is an outstanding natural landscape situated on a ridgetop on a relatively natural and prized local landscape. Now, I've got a case to refer to, and you might like to manage to have a file of these. Yes, I say it, I don't want to take the opportunity to advance a further argument that supports the stance that the site proposed is unsuitable for the purpose intended by this plan change. And I refer to section 2, issue 2 of the section 42A report, which is entitled Landscape Effects and specifically development of the ONL. And I say on page 9, top of the page, armed with all the information Victoria Jones has at her disposal, including Dr. Reed's evidence, she says at 11.6, I am of the opinion that the change would affect, and I believe it's intended to say adversely affect, a unique ONL that offers a unique experience. Strong words, two uniques in fact. The applicant acknowledges this because this is the very reason it is making a major investment and seeking an inappropriate, in our view, zoning that would allow for its development. The tension between the desire for landscape protection and the desire for housing occasionally, I could say regularly, arises. The Environment Court, in the case of Pacific Investment Trust versus Baxter District Council, provides a useful example of how this can be resolved in the right circumstances, and I believe these are they. The case was determined by and large on matters of national importance, which we submit, it has in common with the matters before you. In particular, it was determined on the basis of the proposed dwelling to be situated. It was determined on the basis that the proposed dwelling was to be situated on a headland that would be clearly visible from Akaroa Harbour. The case arose from a desire, landowner to construct a dwelling on his own rural zone land for his personal residence. I set out an extract from the case on the following page. And
I think we can pick that up and read that material when we review your submission. So,
Thank you.
Take us through that.
And I just say, sir, that this does refer to another case, Physical Environment Association of Great Angel, but it's not, I don't believe it will be necessary for you to get it back because of all the stuff is in this one page of the decision, which is on the second last page here. The court considered the visual effects of such a structure from the land and Admiral Harbour. It found in essence that headlands, in that case, in the coastal region, are important landmarks and extremely sensitive to change. It turned the application down on effects on visual amenity. The court relied on an earlier decision, referred to there, which it described as a seminal decision. A state of place of headlands in the coastal environment has been recognised for many years. It is our submission that in place of the coastal marine area, you can read lakeland environment, because just as the marine area is a matter of national importance, it can be, so lakes can similarly be in my submission. Further, by reference to a New Zealand topographic map, at its northern point, most of the headland, Beacon Point is the northernmost point of a headland, and whilst the southernmost point may be the subject of debate, the eastern flank comprises the land, the subject of the hearing. And I've got a copy of a plan here, which I'd like you to look at, because this is a plan which was taken from a topographical map and then locked up by Ian Stephen, and it shows where, in her opinion, the headland would fairly be found, with a blue line around the top of the headland, and then it shows, I think, with an orange mark, as best she could, where the proposed development is considered present change has taken place. So my submission continues. Admittedly, the late variation to the proposal has gone some way to reducing the visual impact of structures from the lake and surrounding area. However, from within the developed urban area, roads, ropes and accessways, etc., some structures will be seen as perched on or just below the ridge line of the headland. If you are persuaded that the development or even part of it is not on the headland as envisaged in the cases referred to, for further submission, that submission is located adjacent to the shores of Lake Wanaka, adjacent to Beacon Point, it shouldn't be Beacon Point Road, overlooking at some altitude the entrance to Stevenson's Arm, across the water from Dublin Bay, and upstream from the outlet, it qualifies as a landmark in its own right. The above areas are all areas of high public use. Our submission is that the combination of the unique location of at least part of the proposed site, its elevation, its valued vegetation, its high public use, its sensitivity to change, is being considered in the same category, justifies being considered in the same category as a headland and requiring consideration accordingly. Yes, that's for me.
Right, I think I just got a point of clarification around the society's submission. I thought probably what we'll do is we'll hear from Mr. Stevens and then we can sort of ask questions. Yeah. Basically, if that's okay, it might be helpful. Now I'm just trying to put my hands on the submission, of course. I had to help me, and now I've lost the most of the paper. Paper war. I did see in your submission. Was referenced, we do not oppose the development of lots 7 to 12.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep, well, this was not time for my time. But I think Stephen was involved. I understand that when looking at this proposal at the time, that area was the most difficult to defend from our point of view.
Yeah.
And I tried to explain it a little while ago. It's another row of houses, another row of sections behind the line. And so it was felt that if that's the way this thing ended, it was giving, making a concession, and may lead to some negotiation. And an outcome that was acceptable may lead to so this, see, the difficulty is this was signed in February.
Yeah.
And the next thing that was heard from the applicant was their request for more time so they could bring forth a new proposal.
Sure.
In my experience, it's customary for the parties to have a yarn to one another and see whether some ground can be made, particularly if they've made a concession like that. But that wasn't the case in this instance. So that's how it arose.
Yes, okay.
Where do we stand today?
I think when we visited the site analysing the proposed scheme change, I mean, obviously that area of lots 7 12, that lots 1 to 3 as well. It's all been completely modified. It's been bulldozed around, all the vegetation's gone.
Yes.
Clearly, it wasn't within our mandate as indigenous vegetation because there isn't any left.
Yes.
It's covered in rubbish, it's covered in weeds, it just didn't stack up. Having said that, after reading the Section 42 report and sort of thinking about this a bit more, there is a requirement to rehabilitate that area. It's an open space. So in fact, if it was rehabilitated and put back the way it should be, then there's no reason why it couldn't remain, in fact, as up now or as open space. So we didn't think of that at the time, but it's a consideration that we felt was reasonable at the time.
Okay. Right, now that's helpful to understand that. I mean, you didn't directly refer to it in your submissions. Again, in the written submissions of the plan change, rather than what you've just been through, you helpfully referred to some paragraphs of the Environment Court decision 148, 149. I mean, you won't have the details there in front of you, but I guess it's just me talking here. I found that quite interesting, quite useful, because some of that discussion there was quite interesting about the extent to which councils could rely upon controls on individual sites in terms of like maintaining vegetation and those sort of things in the long term. Yeah. Have you had much experience with that? it's quite a common thing to see, conditions of consent or some sort of covenant or something being imposed, you've got to maintain this vegetation on this individual site. I mean, the court sort of raising questions about the suitability of that or the sustainability of that. You raised it in your submission. Have you had any experience around the region where you've had to go to the extent of some sort of, complaint to the council that vegetation's not being maintained, take some enforcement action, sort out this condition?
Well, historically, of course, the belief was that soon after the 2006 decision, the negotiations with the council and the applicant would take place, it would become a written decision.
Yes.
And I noticed in one of the submissions in one of the industries, someone noted that the track work hadn't been done in the area that's become a reserve.
Right.
Obviously, the people are looking further down the track and they're not going to develop this year until some decisions will be made. So we'll have clear. But after, I can't see that it's any different than if this were allowed, the land would be, the land that was being revegetated would be partly within privately owned land,
yes.
And that could be subject to covenants,
yeah.
And the balance of the land, I imagine, would be reserved.
Yeah,
and
right.
So the councillor in one of the witnesses was subtly. You know, he said, well, we know a lot about you get together, you fundraise, yeah. And get the job done. And I imagine that would keep going. But, I mean, it seems that this is such a high profile area that if given the opportunity, the will of the council, it would simply happen because it's. I see the Araroa track runs along the one from North Cape.
Oh, yeah, right along the road.
I mean, it's just another of the areas that the reasons that people are being attracted to this.
Yes, all right. Okay, thanks. So maybe if you want to take us through your events and we'll show up and open questions. Oh, we've only got time. 3:30. Cup tea. Well, now, what do we want to do? Sorry, just about to kick off here.
It'd probably be better if we had a tea break first.
I think it's probably appropriate, isn't it? We've got time through to about 4 o'clock, so isn't it? So we've still got. Is the next minute coming through? About 4 past. Yeah. So, well, should we take a quick?
Yeah.
Maybe 10 minutes, I think. Yeah. All right.